I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Bill Arnett joins me now. He's recently published a new book, A Perfect Day for a Walk, The History, Cultures, and Communities of Vancouver on Foot. It's part travelogue and part history. In his observant, inimitable way, he walks parts of the city, bringing the reader the sights and even sound, as well as points us to things we might have missed or overlooked or taken for granted. He offers up hidden gems, as well as fascinating stories and histories of the neighborhoods he walks through, whether it's Kitsilano, where he lives, or Granville Island, or False Creek, or the West End. There's all sorts of things we need to know about and remember. And even places like Yaletown or Chinatown or the downtown east side where we might have misconceptions about, they're seen in a new light through Bill's gaze. The book is a celebration of an ever-changing city, and there's no better way to chart the city's progress than on foot. I'll ask Bill about why he set out to document his walks, the various people he encounters on the way, that he canvasses for their thoughts about the direction of the city. I'll also ask him about why he kept the journeys within the months of October to March. The book also has archival photos, as well as contemporary ones taken by Mr. Arnott, who joined me from here in Vancouver when we taped this interview nearly a month ago. Bill Arnott is the author of A Season on Vancouver Island and the award-winning Gone Viking Books. He is a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society. This new book is published by Arsenal Pulp Press. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Bill Arnott. Mr. Arnott, good morning.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks so much for having me here on the commentary. I genuinely enjoy your show, and it feels so fitting, you know, to Vancouverites chatting about this new Vancouver-based book of mine, A Perfect Day for a Walk.
Well, I appreciate your time. As I was telling you before we started, I enjoyed the book a great deal. I noticed as I was reading it that you make reference to this a few times, a couple of times, that you came to Vancouver 40 years ago. Is that right?
That's right. I came from the Okanagan to go to university at Simon Fraser University.
I guess the question that I ask a lot of people who live in this town is what's kept them here over the years? I'm sure you get the chance to travel as much as you can or you'd like, and by the same token get to live anywhere that you probably would want to. Well, what's kept you here all these years?
Yeah, that's a great question, Joe, and as someone who's grown up here, you can appreciate this as well. And yes, as you said, like so many people, I've been privileged to travel a lot around a lot of the globe, and in my case, being able to write about that. But I do keep coming back to Vancouver. I relocated here to complete my university education as a young adult and have been here for the last 40 years subsequent to that. You know, if you search the city online or ask around in person, you tend to hear these sort of sound bites or slogans. Oh, well, it's a great place for a lifestyle, nature, beauty, some seasons. Decent warm weather, living outdoors, and all that good stuff. And it's very, very true, but I've found it, the city of Vancouver creates a wonderful balance of you can make a living if in a great array of different jobs, creative endeavors, and industries, and yet we're always close to nature. There's spectacular history here. It's a bit cliche, but folks will say quite accurately, you can ski in the morning and go boating in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So with our mountains and our oceans, and we have enjoy a privileged long part of the year that we can be sports and recreations, you know, doing these things out of doors. So it wasn't a great stretch. And I did go away to Eastern Canada for graduate studies. But like a lot of us West Coasters, I was keen to come back. And as I say, you can still make a wonderful professional career if that is, you know, what you're focused on. And yet there is a little sense of that Lotus Land vibe. We can wear an open collar shirt as we go about our day's business and have a fabulous recreational bit of activity in the middle of a work week day. So there's a long answer as to why I love being here. And then it just felt natural and a privilege to be able to write about it again in this manner where I explore the city on foot.
Yeah, as I was reading the book, I realized, and I've lived in Vancouver my whole life, that we forget this all the time because, you know, there is a car culture in North America. Just how walkable Vancouver is. I was in Surrey recently, and yeah. It's not terribly walkable. I'm sure there are parts that are, but there's little that one wants to walk around there.
We see this certainly as an urban center grows. It's prevalent in large American cities, being a car culture, and the first thing that comes through, most large centers will have an interstate or a highway going through it, the downtown core. And it wasn't until I started doing a little deeper dive in the research for this book, A Perfect Day for a Walk, where I peeled back some more layers of Vancouver history. And interestingly enough, for a large North American urban center, Vancouver was one of the last to really embrace vehicles. Mm. We were such a water-based city as well. Lots of shoreline, the inlets, and ferries were a means of mass transit. We, right out of the gates, and by that I mean fairly early in the 20th century, had pretty good infrastructure with respect to our trolley cars, trams, and then eventually buses came in the 1940s. So there has been, for the longest time, a transit culture here and a grassroots opposition to letting a highway go through the downtown. I think this contributes to, we still see it today, in many cases, 100 years later. This remains a walkable green city.
Yeah, and not just sort of the seawalls that we see from, say, well, certainly the one around Stanley Park and the one that comes out of it towards Science World. But you know, we also forget the one on the north side at False Creek, the Coal Harbor there, I should say, and then, of course, False Creek that goes from Science World towards Granville Island and beyond. They're marvelous walking places that you take us to in this book throughout, in the middle of the city, if you will, or outside of those places. The other thing that you do so well in the book is that there are places that we obviously know, those of us who live here read about, that we've been to, but really do come alive when you talk about the history. And I guess that was an important reason to write the book, wasn't it? I mean, not just to walk, but to talk about what we're walking along or beside.
Well, yes, I even thought of it as a reminder and maybe hoping it would be an incentive or even a challenge to individuals, whether you're a local, a lifetime resident, or whether you're here visiting, there's so much on offer. And as you said, we take it for granted oftentimes, and certainly if we're in a vehicle, things can, whiz by us. We might have our nose in a book. We might be listening to you, Joe, on the commentary on our podcast, and assuming we're on transit. But if we get out of the vehicle, there's a great deal to be experienced. And yes, even as a longtime local, I was delighted with the things I was discovering anew. So as a lifetime traveler, I was acutely aware of the fact that, we may go somewhere new. We travel, and then invariably we have a little change in our state of mind. We think, oh, well, this is interesting. Perhaps we slow down. Perhaps we become a little more aware of the sensory engagement. And I thought, well, why can't we do that at home? And my goodness, this is a destination, a global hotspot for travelers. And I also wanted to really hammer home the fact that irrespective of budget, time, accessibility, you can have a wonderful exploratory adventure, an excursion, an expedition. You can be a traveler, an explorer, an adventurer here where we live and we work without affecting, a carbon footprint, without having to get on a fossil fuel burning craft, if you know what I mean. Yeah. And I'm acutely aware of mobility varies for folks, and so I'm also aware of, hey, if you are using a chair, a walker, a stroller, a scooter, that does not preclude you from experiencing all of these things in the very same manner and without having to spend money. And as I say, maybe even improving our respective footprints as we go about doing it.
And the other thing that you remind me of, and again, this is something that one overlooks when we're walking somewhere and we have to go somewhere, and this is why your way of say, wandering works, is that there's a lot of signage around, isn't there? A lot of them nowadays have that code at the bottom that we can scan with our phones and read more about. That talk about the particular places and the history as well, right?
There really is a wealth of info accessible for those that you can, you know, do a surface skim, just a little bit of interest, or you can go for a deep dive. And as you know, Joe, from the book, the joy I had as I was doing these perfect day walks, visiting with experts, folks that have worked with this city, artists, indigenous locals, travelers, the amount of things that are on offer with just a little fresh eye or perspective. The V2K initiative, the Millennium Project, is a wonderful example where beautiful chunks of granite that were moved to create roads in the past were saved and, in fact, then turned into art installations, where individual stories have been embossed and posted. And that's the beauty of storytelling, like true narrative. I believe it's a Voltaire quote where it says, history is a pack of lies agreed upon. So I was visiting, as you know, from the book with Lorenz von Fersen, who worked for many years and had a hand in creating some fabulous artistic and cultural and historical legacies across the country. And he was saying what a joy it was to not necessarily try to encapsulate, quote-unquote, historical references to these places around the city or these art installations or these open-air museums, but to get individual people's stories. Because, of course, storytelling has been the manner in which we've shared our history and culture and narrative forever. The written word is pretty current. Now, there's obviously ethical considerations when folks are sharing their story. We all see the world through respective lenses and perspectives. And yet that, to me, is one of the great revealing elements, is perhaps gleaning a fresh perspective onto these places that we think are familiar, that we think that we know, and perhaps questioning things. That, to me, is the richness of that wandering, to use your word, and true exploration with an open mind and a fresh perspective every time we step out the door. And I find this city reinventing itself on a daily basis. And I'm not just talking about new builds, commercial development. Yeah. I'm talking about streetscapes, laneways in the West End that have been humanized with personal names and the important cultural impact and influences that locals have had throughout the years, and it's all there on offer for those of us that are intrigued and interested, and can just have a lovely walk, as I say, in our backyard, so to speak.
Yeah. So you just alluded to how quickly Vancouver is changing. I think it's a boring question to ask if we're changing for the better or for the worse, but as you see it, how are we coping with change?
Well, one of the, I think, best examples, as I'm speaking to you now, Joe, I'm just on the border of Kitsilano. I can peer towards False Creek and get a glimpse of the Sinakwa development. And as we speak, this is the largest indigenous development taking place at the moment, commercial, residential, mixed use, what we term non-market housing. It's all there. This is a big project, and that literally is the original Musqueam and Squamish name, also used by the Tsleil-Waututh people to describe the mouth of False Creek. And this was, for example, Sinakwa, or Snak, was where Squamish chief August Jack Capsilano grew up. This was a place of harvesting. This was a place of sustainable resource management, clean water. The symbolism is remarkable. There was a time that part of that land was turned into the federal government terminology, an Indian reservation, and now it's a place of sort of mixed use ownership. And now what I like to see is it's very much a place of indigenous land that is being developed, and I see a very promising circularity and a new growth in that manner. And within the next decade, we're going to see another 11 towers, Some of them are already partially built and looking very attractive. And that, to me, is one of the, I think, best examples of a healthy rebirth of the land and finding that brilliant balance between stewardship and ongoing economic prosperity as well.
Yeah. At the same time, though, a lot of people aren't happy with so many towers. How do you view how we talk about things? Do you think we have a way of communicating with one another when we disagree, say, with what's happening?
Well, that's a great example, human dynamic, and having outlets or forums for discussion, conversation, empathy, open-mindedness. And yes, we may not like towers, but one of the online threads that I got involved with, that I even quote one in the book, you know, one person said, is Vancouver a good or bad city? And someone said, well, yes, it is, which I think is a perfect example. And it's not just walking a tightrope. That's rather sincere. But then someone expounded on that, saying, yeah, it's a beautiful place to live, provided that you can afford it. Mm. Now, we may not necessarily find the topographical visual of towers attractive, and yet if this is a means for us to get more accessible doors, yes, there's expensive real estate, but this type of, this scale of development does also result in elements of affordable housing. We still have a pretty good proliferation of co-op housing separate from condominiums, and that's how developments get made now, is trying to be, to the best of designers and planners and developers' ability, to have a breadth of accessibility. One of the things I always liked about, my wife and I have lived now in over a dozen Vancouver neighborhoods, and seeing lots of our neighborhoods within the downtown core being, I feel, truly representative of the of communities, a proper breadth of all socioeconomic levels, mm-hmm. oftentimes, and I'm generalizing, but it is prevalent in a lot of neighborhoods, and that's something I'm acutely proud of, that knowing that we have neighbors and are living with folks that have much, much more and much, much less, and we're still shopping in many of the same places, and we're still walking on that same bit of seawall and still enjoying the trees that, for the most part, are prevalent across this city.
So I'm somebody who's interviewed a lot of people over the years, and as I'm reading the book, I really enjoy the conversations you have with all manner of people that you have throughout the book. Some of these are planned meetings and walks, some are not. How do you go about connecting with people on the street? I mean, Vancouverites have this reputation in some quarters of being aloof or cold. Do you find that it's a chore to overcome that, say?
Well, I liken it to, there's an old phrase we would use. This is, you walk into any environment, and someone might say, well, read the room. How are you reading the room? And you can have a sense if someone is perhaps open or receptive to having a chat or a visit, or if they're not. Some folks are shy, some folks are reserved, and more often than not, I'll just, take a swing, and oftentimes you can be delighted with the organic or unexpected interactions you have. So I was having a visit yesterday with Margaret Gallagher for her CBC radio show, North by Northwest, and mm-hmm. we were having elements of this very dialogue, Joe, because she, like you and me for the most part, lifetime Vancouverites, and sure, some folks would say it's tough to crack into perhaps finding your tribe, for a lack of a better term, a community, a network. And yet I went to a wonderful evening. You may remember this from the book. I referenced going to some storytelling at Beaumont Studios. And it was more or less a room full of individuals from elsewhere that now consider themselves Vancouverites. And having that dialogue, and of course anywhere you go that might be new to you, it can be tough to, hey, find a friend, find a community. And it takes a lot of courage and a lot of confidence. And yet it is here. It is available. It is accessible. Don't mistake shyness for aloofness. I think that's a great reminder that'll get us through a lot of situations in life. Having said that, I was just recently doing some touring in Eastern Canada. Mm-hmm. Spent time in Toronto, spent time in Montreal, going about interacting in the same manner I do here. And it was then I realized, oh, here on the West Coast, we really are more receptive and warmer to interactions and social visits. It even if it feels at times difficult to crack that nut, it really is accessible and available here with a little more perseverance and, as I say, open-mindedness and a willingness.
The book is also amusing in some parts. You referenced that evening at a reception. I still remember that line several weeks after reading the book, that you were served, I guess, wine and potato chips, and you were here. You found yourself mingling in this room where if you hadn't gone, you'd be doing the same thing at home.
Well, it's true. That's rather true. And that was, a great snapshot of paper plates, bulk potato chips, boxed wine being shared. In other words, it was a kitchen party, like yeah. they might say in the Maritimes, but it was happening here in Vancouver. In other words, there's welcoming open spaces, and it just takes a little perseverance to perhaps find that. Great example. I get an invitation this week, as a matter of fact, Joe, to just someone, hello, on the street. We realize, we tend to have similar walking schedules. Next thing you know, I'm invited to a barbecue, and next thing you know, you're making some new potential friends and contacts. Well, I don't know a lot of places where that, a lot of other large cities where that's going to happen so easily. And I just found that a great, great reminder. And I don't think this experience is too unusual either in this town.
The more you think about it, it's not unusual at all. You have a number of people that you talk to, as I mentioned in the book. One of them is Fiona Lamb, our poet laureate. She talks about how things have become intense, more so in the last 4 years, say. For you, what does that intensity mean to you?
Well, since you spoke about my visit with Fiona, and I'm good pals with Evelyn Lau as well, just our previous poet laureate as well as our current poet laureate, both Chinese-Canadian individuals. And so I did have a couple of disturbing visits with some of my pals where there was they experienced open aggression during COVID, for example,
right.
When whether folks were that were racist somehow felt that was their window or opportunity to vent those feelings and sentiments that I just can't relate to, and so I guess is always there with certain individuals. And times it bubbles up, and otherwise, I guess it's kept in check. Or I like to believe that it can and does change, but I don't know. And you referenced Fiona's and my visit, and of course she was a lawyer in her previous career, and so I think that she would be always very aware of is that conflict evident or is it just beneath the surface. And having that sort of acuity and awareness, sure, that is there. And having said that, I've also visited with good pals when I spend a lot of time in the downtown East Side as part of their community activities and artistic outlets. A pal there saying, you know, every time I get on a bus in this neighborhood, it feels like a mini UN, his term, in a wonderful way. And he said nowhere else that he's lived did it feel so friendly. He can set up a seat outside of his apartment, and almost everyone that walks by will say good morning or at least a smile and nod. And that, to me, is what I think is the prevalent sentiment around our downtown core.
There's another episode in the book that you talk about. I guess you were going across the Cambie Bridge, and you see somebody who wants to jump off the bridge, somebody in distress, and you go up to them, and you defuse the situation. Well, what's going through your mind, Bill, as you see that and go and engage? I'd like to think that we'd all do that in a similar circumstance. I don't know if we would, but you certainly did.
Well, yeah, that was a jarring one. And as we know, in pockets of our city, like many urban centers, our unhoused community is a large part of our population. Unaddressed mental health issues and challenges are ongoing. Things like drug use, which is a very small facet of some of those mental health issues, socioeconomic disparities. But that was an early morning, finishing a jog, crossing the Cambie Bridge. I think it was 5 a.m. anyways, and this individual is clearly planning to jump. Now, the Cambie Street Bridge, for those that aren't aware, it's not that high.
Yeah.
And, you know, it may sound like dark humor, but when you ask me, what am I thinking, feeling, doing, all these things raced through my mind. First thing was, oh, friend, if you really want to do yourself, and this is the wrong bridge, you're just going to hurt yourself or drown, which is really tragic if you want to, you know, flick the switch. And everyone, if they choose to end this iteration in that manner, and goodness knows I've been through that a couple of instances with immediate family. Having said that, you're never equipped to perhaps be in that situation. I thought, oh, my goodness, there's no rule book. Or if there is, I certainly haven't read a copy. And then thinking, oh, this is happening. And it's the same thing. You say, would we react? Of course we would, I like to believe. And it's beyond uncomfy and a sense of, my goodness, to what level am I responsible or accountable? But the same thing if someone needs help. Yesterday, a lady falls off her bike. Well, of course I'm there helping her and making sure she's okay. And if we needed to get an ambulance or a bit of first aid or an EMT, that's going to happen. We're going to do it. Having said that, my being on foot did make these things possible. If you're going by in a vehicle, I suppose you could stop on a bridge deck. Mm-hmm. But now the issue is compounding and exacerbating. But that individual, I don't know if he... It didn't strike me as someone just looking for like a cry for help, because there was no one around. He had not let his family know where he was. This was someone that was hurting. And, of course, we can all relate to that. Back to the talk of empathy and having a bit of courage and wanting to jump into, or feeling and needing to jump into a situation. We are all in this together, whether we want to be or not. And that was the manner in which I just talked, because this is someone that's probably just suffering and lonely, and who amongst us can't relate to that every so often? And that situation did resolve itself in what I felt was a positive manner. He certainly seemed to have a little sense of perhaps a renewed perspective and a hope that I think is the most that we could wish for.
Are there parts of Vancouver that you like walking through or around that aren't in the book? I mean, I live at Fraser and King Edward, and I always notice that my neighborhood gets short shrift in books about Vancouver.
Well, fair enough. And the physicality of me being on foot, Joe, and walking, for my wife and I happen to live just off Burrard, so it's sort of south central, you know, Vancouver,
right,
downtown.
Yeah.
I had to arbitrarily choose some boundaries. So I did choose the neighborhoods west of Main Street and south of Burrard Inlet, because for me it was easy, walkable. Mm-hmm. I felt it was a great encapsulation of some historical touchstones, and many of these historical art walks that I could treat as breadcrumbs to sort of keep me going into the next neighborhood, this and that, very walkable. And I arbitrarily chose the more or less West 16th Avenue as a sort of a southern border because it used to represent the city boundary from a CPR township perspective. And the rails there, and I have a nice personal tie-in in that my Nana and Gramps had their home where the Ridge Theater is now at 16th and Arbutus. Gramps' home was moved around the corner for the theater to be built. So there was a personal tie-in as well. And my good friend Nick Marino, whose book, which is also with Arsenal Pulp Press, East Side Story, he writes about East Vancouver, and he does it beautifully. And so we had a joke. We thought, okay, well, my turf, I will walk and write about the area in our city west of Main Street. He's done a lovely job talking about East Vancouver. And if I've got maybe better leg strength and a new pair of trainers, I will expand for the next iteration, Joe. Because as silly as it is, I was proud that I literally wore through a good pair of trail shoes as I did these walks 6 months for creating a perfect day for walk, and I think it was about 1,000 kilometers. So at first I was a little disappointed that I found a hole, a big hole in my shoes, but now I think, oh, hey, maybe I'm kind of proud of that fact as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what the best footwear is for walking around Vancouver.
Whatever's comfy, whatever you enjoy.
Yeah. You also focus in the book these walks between October and March, and I was curious to know, what about outside those months? What's Vancouver like for you?
Oh, well, today is a good example. We're chatting. It's going to be 30 degrees, even though it's well into September. So, I mean, there's always good conditions year-round. I literally was working with a schedule for creating a book. So that and big books are launched in the fall, traditionally, like this book now. So we're working with those kind of parameters. Also, I felt it gave me enough time to touch on a good breadth of places. And as you mentioned, visiting with a good array of really neat people that I felt represented a super cross-cultural perspective of our city, historically, artistically, creatively. But I love the fact that I got a couple of proper snow days in within that window as well. And it did encapsulate, I felt, a pretty rich mosaic. There's an evocative sort of sensory feel and engagement I feel with with those different seasons. You can go on any travel-type website and you're going to see some lovely Vancouver photos or read some stories through the nice summer months and the cruise ships are in and folks are playing volleyball at the beaches. And I wanted to maybe just go a little outside that, a little less obvious and a little more, as I say, of an invitation or incentive to explore in a year-round manner.
Well, what are you thinking about, Bill? I guess, what are the considerations that you're taking, you're making, I should say, as you're taking the photographs that we see in the book? In terms of what you want readers to see, are you thinking about that as you're taking the snapshots, eh?
Absolutely. So I've been privileged to create a few mixed media books where, it's my, as you know, it's my prose and I with photos. And in this case, to me, it creates a deeper sensory engagement. I mean, literally, it's like we're enjoying little stories and vignettes of film with each, you know, as we turn the pages. And as you know, then I was using my own contemporary photos alongside Vancouver City Archives photos for a now and a then, a sort of compare and contrast perspective. So again, it's, even though I write in the present tense and we're experiencing these things together in real time, we're always having one toe in the past as well as the present, which then, of course, a timeline we can't help to think, but well, what's coming up? What do we have on the horizon? And that, to me, is a lovely sort of allure to keep going and exploring and see what's next.
Yeah, I must say I enjoyed the contemporary photos, but as well as the archival photos, because you do deploy a deft touch in terms of what you're choosing from. I mean, these are some of these photos I've seen before. Your eye is quite keen, I should say, in what you've chosen to show us, I guess, you know, not just in what you've written, but in the photographs you use in the book, throughout the book.
Thank you. And I'm going to harken that back to the walking. Walking has its own pace and cadence, and you can't help but notice things you might easily miss when you're in a moving vehicle. Mm. And that, to me, draws out that element of art and artistry that is just a delight and a privilege to share in this manner. And there's a mood you can that I feel fits the narrative quite nicely, irrespective of the weather.
Indeed, indeed. So you are. I was going to ask you if you're hopeful about the future. I can't help but think as I was finishing the book that you are, aren't you? I mean, this is not a city that I mean, there are various narratives about where we are and where we're headed. You know, anywhere from Vancouver is dying to it's not the same like it used to be. You are hopeful about where we're headed, right?
Well, yeah, if it's not obvious with our visit together, I am inherently an optimistic guy. And I'll be the first one to challenge someone if they say this city is perhaps not to their liking. I'm going to say, so what are you doing about that? And what are you doing to change it? I know what I'm doing, and it's not always an easy task, but I'm going to persevere and share in this manner and encourage and challenge and getting out there. And I think we all tend to be more or less alike. We want to have a friend. We want to enjoy, to the best of our ability, a healthy life. We want to feel safe. Well, I also say it's up to each and every one of us to incite that, to foster that, and to build that.
And with this book, you certainly have. Bill, I so appreciate your time today. I've enjoyed this book, and congratulations and good luck with it. Thanks for this.
Joe, I appreciate your time, too. And anyone that is reading A Perfect Day for a Walk from Arsenal Pulp Press, I hope that you, like Joe and I, genuinely enjoy it. And I thank you again.
The book is called A Perfect Day for a Walk, The History, Cultures, and Communities of Vancouver on Foot. It's published by Arsenal Pulp Press. Its author, Bill Arnott, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.